This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. President Donald Trump fired off a bunch of tweets in the past 24 hours, and in the barrage, there was this one. Quote, President Xi and I will always be friends, no matter what happens with our dispute on trade. China will take down its trade barriers because it is the right thing to do. Taxes will become reciprocal, and a deal will be made on intellectual property. Great future for both countries! Exclamation point, end quote. Now, you'll recall that in the escalating tit-for-tat trade tensions between China and the U.S., late last month, the Trump administration ordered a 25% tariff on some $50 billion worth of Chinese tech products for what the U.S. calls China's harmful acts, policies, and practices when it comes to American intellectual property. In fact, the U.S. Trade Representative recently concluded that Chinese theft of American IP currently costs between $225 billion and $600 billion annually. Well, if you think all of that is just bluster, consider this.
This is a serious threat to our national security. I mean, our economy depends on the ability to innovate. And if there's a dedicated nation state who's using its intelligence apparatus to steal day in and day out what we're trying to develop, that poses a serious threat to our country.
And that comes not from a member of the Trump administration, but a man named John Carlin, Assistant Attorney General for National Security in the Justice Department in the Obama administration. He spoke to CBS's 60 Minutes back in 2016. So, in fact, there is bipartisan agreement that Chinese practices around IP are problematic, to say the least. And the issue is vitally important to Massachusetts' tech sector. So we're going to look at two things today. First, a Massachusetts company that had its IP stolen by a Chinese firm. And second, we'll talk about the ample disagreement on whether tariffs are the best way to deal with the China challenge. So joining me first is Daniel McGann. He's CEO of American Superconductor. They're based in Ayr, and they make control systems for wind turbines. Daniel McGann, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Okay, so you are the company that had your IP stolen by China.
We are that company, yeah.
And it started back in what, 2005, 2006?
So the relationship goes back about that far. The theft actually occurs in the late days of 2010 into 2011.
Okay. But I kind of started back in 2005, 2006 because that's when American Superconductor wanted to enter the Chinese wind turbine market.
Right. So our model is very similar. If you know the Russian nested doll series of different layers, we would work with the local partner on the outer layers, which are making a wind turbine. So mm-hmm. trying to do that analogy through the tech transfer. We do that legally. But then we would reserve 5 to 10% of the content, really the software, the operating system, and the hardware controllers that make the wind turbine perform well. That content comes from us. So the inner layers of that nested wooden doll, if you're using that as an analogy.
Got it. Now, but when you decided to try and enter the Chinese market, you were already concerned about the vulnerability of having your IP stolen.
Well, you hear the stories and you know, when we went over, I actually interviewed people that wanted to be the general manager of our Chinese operation that basically went through the process on how they stole IP from other Western companies. So you kind of learn as you go and you go in eyes wide open and try to protect yourself. So we segregated IP for what was in China, what was in Europe, what was in Massachusetts, what was in Wisconsin. And we made sure there wasn't an easy way that those parts could come together until an actual crime was committed.
Right. I want to get to that in a second. But so you segregated the IP. You even took it off the internet, right?
Right,
so they shouldn't have been able to get to it, you know, directly just by a hack.
Correct.
Okay.
And the way the wind turbine works, so your listeners understand, all the controls talk to each other and they all identify that they come from the same source, American Superconductor. And they do that. All that communication happened under an encrypted protocol with the Chinese were unable to turn off. They had 800 R&D engineers trying to reverse engineer everything we could do. They were unsuccessful in doing that and they had to resort to outright theft to get what they wanted.
Okay. And this is where it becomes very cloak and dagger, actually. I mean, it's almost unbelievable, but it happened. So you partnered with this company, Sinovel, this Chinese company, and they somehow turned, I guess there's no other way to put it, right?
Yeah.
Turned one of your European contractors?
Yeah. So think about how big this got. So they went and they became number one in China by 2008. And number two in the world. They were bigger than General Electric by 2009. They liked the technology so much that they wanted it all. So they coerced. They used spycraft era type you know, it's like a Tom Clancy novel, you know, or any kind of spy versus spy type arrangement where they offer them money, they offer them women, they offer them a different life.
This is a contractor in Austria.
This is
Austria.
A direct employee.
Wasn't direct
a
employee,
right,
that's
right, right. So he's a Serbian national working in Austria. He's already been tried, convicted. He confessed to the crime.
Yeah.
They basically had set up a whole new life for him in Beijing that he was unable to get to because we were able to work with Austrian authorities to catch him.
I mean, they said he, you know, they through there's text messages that have been shown that he said he wanted women and money, and they were ready to give him $1.7 million, and they were really buttering him up, and so what did he end up giving them?
What he did, and he was kind of smart about it, which helps us. He was able to transfer some of the outer source code at the turbine level, but at our hardware controller, what he did is he recompiled new versions. So if we do this by analogy, like Windows, there used to be Windows 3.1. So imagine like Windows 3.4 shows up. There was never Windows 3.4. So you see this new version that he turned off this encryption. He added some features that were being tested and tried out in China at the time. And that's how we knew there was a wind farm that was operating. The turbines were still spinning. We had put in code to turn it off by a certain time. They continued to operate beyond that time window. And we knew there was an issue at that point.
That's just amazing. It's amazing, right?
We tried to put in every piece of production we could think of. And I think, you know, the fact that they actually had to resort to spycraft and theft to get what they wanted proves that the level of protection was probably more sophisticated than most industrial products that go into China.
So when those turbines in that one test facility were still spinning, even though they were supposed to be off, what was your first reaction?
We knew we had a problem. The question is, what was the problem?
Yeah.
And we did some analysis looking at our own people who had access, who had motive, who had the ability to be able to be in China and deliver this technology to them. And it really came down to one person very quickly. Mm. We work with authorities in Austria because that's where he was at the time, and we're able to catch him.
Right. So he admits the crime. He does a year in jail.
He confessed. Right. Okay. He got sentenced 3. I think he had a year plus time served.
Okay. But then we have Sinovel, right?
It would be 10 years if it was in the U.S., just to give you.
Okay. Yeah. But, I mean, we still have Sinovel, this massive company.
And we still have about 20% of the fleet of all the wind turbines in China that are owned by the Chinese government still operating under stolen code.
To this day?
To this day.
Your stolen code?
Yes.
What has this cost your company?
Well, it cost shareholders in about a day almost $1 billion. The damages we're seeking in China are to the tune of $1.2 billion. The damages that the U.S. Department of Justice have ascribed to this, so they related this to akin to attempted corporate homicide. The Wall Street Journal reported damages of $4.8 billion. So it's a big number regardless of what you look at. And if they can do this for wind turbines are one of the most benign products on the planet, right? To want to go and steal that technology, you can only imagine if you're an industrial company doing something less benign that the Chinese may want that too.
There's one more layer of the mind-boggling nature of the lengths that China went to get your technology. Because do I remember the chronology right? Even after that former employee had admitted to his crimes, that a branch of the Chinese military performed a successful spear phishing attack on your company to get even more IP? Or
yeah, there was. So we have other businesses, and we can talk about how the business is doing today, maybe. But there was other technology around wind that they didn't get. We knew that they didn't get. They knew they didn't get, and they were trying to find, you know, a way to get additional technology through the PLA.
Okay, the Chinese military.
Army, yeah.
All right. So in 2016, you talked to 60 Minutes, and there's a scene where you're walking through your manufacturing facility, and it's empty. And at that point in time, you had said that you had to lay off some 300 people.
It was almost 700.
Almost 700 people.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I got the numbers backward. Right. Almost 700 out of roughly 900 you had employed at that time. That was 2016. Give me some good news.
Is things going better now? We took what we learned in China. What we were selling was basically the operating system, the software, and a pallet of parts, and then allow them to make their end control system on their own. We don't allow customers to do that anymore. We do it all ourselves. We do end-to-end. So we've helped to create one of the largest wind turbine companies in India, and one of the largest wind turbine companies in South Korea. But that's only a piece of our business. We made a strategic decision to diversify into making the grid more resilient, allowing it to work with more resiliency, and making the U.S. Navy more resilient, surface ships from mines and minefields.
Good.
So we've taken other technology and found ways to deploy it in other markets and then rebuild this company.
Great. It's good to hear, because there's one more part of the story of what happened to American Superconductor that I just have to touch on, because it's so, I mean, it's like, it's where the rub is, right? That you had your Massachusetts company, you have your technology stolen by China, and yet there is a wind turbine in the state of Massachusetts running that stolen technology?
Right. So there are a few of them, and that's the evidence that went into the U.S. Department of Justice case against the Chinese, which we got a criminal conviction
in January.
Just in January, and sentencing is scheduled to occur in June.
But taxpayer dollars were used to buy one of those.
Taxpayer dollars. So if you go back to the beginning of Obama and TARP and stimulus money was used for federal taxpayers to the Commonwealth of Massachusetts to purchase wind turbines that had stolen software from a Massachusetts company.
That is head smacking, I have to say. A couple more quick questions for you, Dan. You've been so generous in sharing your story here. So you mentioned that, yes, in January there was a decision by a federal jury in this DOJ case against Sinovel, the company that you had partnered with in China, and they found that, yes, Sinovel did steal your trade secrets. And U.S. Attorney Scott Blader says of that January conviction, again, of this year, that it sends a strong and clear message to the that the theft of ideas and ingenuity is not a business dispute. It's a crime and will be prosecuted as such. How important do you think that verdict is?
We think it's critical, because what it does is it puts this administration on the hook, and you can see it in the daily events today. We're talking about trade issues with China. Front and center is our issue with its intellectual property, and ultimately what they're after is, we've tried and convict you in our courts. We want the Chinese system to work. If you're a member of WTO, you need to have your laws work and these mechanisms to be able to protect IP. Xi Jinping himself has come out very strongly saying we need to punish the wrongdoers that steal intellectual property. And our case is kind of the poster child for really testing, does the Chinese system allow for protection of these intellectual property rights from Western companies? And that's why we have all these cases over in China. So if they just enforce their own laws, this should come ultimately to a positive outcome
right.
for our company.
But that's a really big if, though. So finally, let me ask you then, what do you think of the fact that it's the Trump administration that has imposed these tariffs, perhaps as a lever to do exactly what you're saying? It didn't happen under the Obama administration. Do you think these tariffs are a good step or not?
It's certainly different. So to evaluate if it's good or bad, I got to focus on the outcome and see what comes of it. I know, you know, because we were very much involved with then Secretary Kerry and then Secretary Clinton and all the Obama administration up to six cabinet level officials and the vice president. Every 6 months there is negotiated economic diplomacy between the countries. And I can say that obviously didn't work. Scheduling these dialogues didn't allow these issues to get resolved. So maybe this unscheduled whatever this is that we're going through will help at least bring the sides to the table and realize that both sides can win on this issue.
Well, Daniel McGann is president and CEO of American Superconductor based in Ayer. Thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Let's turn now to Joel Trachman. He's a professor of international law at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. Professor Trachman, welcome to you.
Thanks so much, Magna.
Let's pick up where Dan left off. I mean, with the story of what happened to American Superconductor in the background, do you think that these tariffs are a step in the right direction or not?
Well, as Dan said, we need to focus on the outcome. And a lot depends on what the Chinese reaction will be and what the United States' reaction to their reaction will be. And right now, we're kind of in a trade war, or at least in a proposed trade war. Nothing, you know, the shooting hasn't begun yet. But if these tariffs are imposed, it will hurt many producers in the United States, consumers in the United States, a lot of people in China. If the outcome instead is for China to improve its intellectual property practices, as it's agreed to do in a number of contexts, that could be a good thing.
Okay. So to me, that's one of the key questions here. I think it was what Dan was getting at is, what are the means by which the United States can encourage exactly this, the improvement in China on intellectual property practices? I was seeing that, for example, a couple of members former members of the Obama administration, Matthew Goodman and Eli Ratner, were writing in Foreign Affairs that they think that the U.S. should lead with the positive vision, in their words, of what 21st century trade practices should look like, right? And help set that agenda. Their argument was that things like the Trans-Pacific Partnership would have done exactly that. Your thoughts?
I don't think that the Trans-Pacific Partnership would have prevented the kinds of outcomes that Dan's company has had, that American Superconductor has had. I think that it would have improved intellectual property protection, but I think we need more. The United States has been negotiating a bilateral investment treaty with China. When the United States negotiated with China its terms of accession to the World Trade Organization, we specifically put into their agreement a commitment not to require intellectual property transfers as a condition for investment.
Right.
And there are other provisions, including provisions in the WTO Trade and Intellectual Property Rights Agreement, that say you can't discriminate, you have to enforce intellectual property rights. There's a long chapter of that on enforcement, and the United States has brought cases against China on the quality of its enforcement.
Okay, so should it be doing more of that then? It may be in concert with other allies who may have suffered the same fate with Chinese IP practices.
So I think other allies are interested. You know, the United States has brought a case at the World Trade Organization for these intellectual property practices, and a number of countries, including the European Union and Japan and Taiwan and a number of other countries, have joined. So other countries have experienced these problems, and they want to do something about it. The problem is the law is not so clear that there's an absolute right to a decision, and it may be that China finds it's more valuable to continue doing what it's doing and accept the retaliation that would occur under World Trade Organization law than to change its practices.
How likely do you think that is?
We'll have to see. So far, China has decided, as evidenced by practice, to continue to do these things despite objections. So these concerns have been on the table for at least a decade.
Yeah.
And the United States has been discussing it with China, has been trying to induce China to change, and China hasn't changed. And there's a lot of value that China receives from violating American intellectual property.
Yeah, I mean, sort of another way to put that, and this has nothing – this is a separate set of data, but I just think it's equally compelling. I'm looking here, according to the New York Times – that China's share of U.S. of imports to the U.S. in computers and electronics, for example, is 46%, according to the New York Times. So you touched on this at a little earlier, Joel, but there are potential negative consequences to both of some American businesses and American consumers here.
So I think when Donald Trump came into office, he wanted to impose tariffs on China, and he was very single-minded about that. And he went to Bob Lighthizer at the United States Trade Representative, and he said, give me tariffs. And in some ways, this issue of intellectual property is an excuse to impose tariffs on China to respond to concerns, which I think are erroneous, about the bilateral trade deficit with China. And we're doing that. But as you say, it's hurting the United States to do this, both as an importer, because we have complex supply chains that need components from China, and for consumers, but also as an exporter. And the farmers in the Midwest are getting killed by even the threat of these sanctions that China is proposing to put on.
Right. I mean, which is why Apple, Dell, IBM, Google, the supply chain issues, the reason why they are very unhappy about these tariffs. But let me just let me get back to one quick thing, and perhaps at the risk of asking again, because I'm seeking for answers here. Am I hearing you say that perhaps the best way to further the development of or the improvement of Chinese IP practices is, again, through the WTO or through improvements at the WTO, through changes, through bringing more cases?
So the existing law probably is not sufficient.
Is not adequate. Okay.
To solve all of these problems, partly because the remedies for sanctions are not necessarily significant enough, the remedy for violations. And so new law, new rules, and better enforcement of the existing Chinese intellectual property laws would be a solution. I think the kinds of pressure that Dan has been talking about are ways to perhaps highlight these issues, let United States companies know about these issues as they invest. One of the proposals that the Trump administration administration has made is to make it tougher for Chinese companies to invest in the United States. And those kinds of things will put pressure on the Chinese government. So I think this is a management issue, a negotiation issue that may take some time to work out.
Well, Joel Trachtman is a professor of international law at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Meghna.
And a little earlier, we heard from Daniel Began, president and CEO of American Superconductor. Great conversation about a Massachusetts company that was fighting back against Chinese stealing of his intellectual property. We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.